On Robinhood Radio, it's time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage. David is a multimedia journalist with an online column at themediabeat.com and has reported since 2012 for the PBS network, mainly on ethical issues. He is also the author of a memoir, A Question of Paternity, Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter.
This is David Tereshchuk with my first The Media Beat of 2025 for the weekend beginning January 3rd. It's a time, of course, to peer into the year ahead, but just as inevitably, into the next 4 years. That's, of course, the standard length of a presidential term of office, if completed, and it's bound to see sharpened tension or outright conflict between the incoming president and the media. As for the man himself, he claims to be expecting the opposite, saying he now basks in everyone's good favour. The first term, everybody was fighting me, he has said. In this term, everybody wants to be my friend. For the press, it's very clear that overall its members are now walking a tightrope between getting simply well prepared for trouble, like any communicators with a duty to the public would get, and on the other side, becoming cravenly fearful. There have already been disturbing wobbles on the tightrope, like those TV journalists who appeared to bend the knee at Mar-a-Lago. Yes, of course, I'm talking about you, Mika Brzezinski, and Joe Scarborough. Though in all honesty, I cannot fully share in the self-righteous media outrage that greeted their Florida visit. I can quite easily see myself making a similar trip. We're all journalists, for heaven's sake. And Lord knows I have, in the course of my work, had to get up close and personal with a lot more disagreeable and viciously autocratic characters than Donald J. Trump. More serious was the sudden, I'd say precipitate, decision by ABC News and its Disney corporate overlords to settle in the libel lawsuit Trump brought against them concerning the Jean Carroll sexual assault case. These media defendants had plenty of grounds for arguing their case, even if their news host George Stephanopoulos did get sloppily inaccurate in his phrasing during the rough and tumble of an interview with a Trump-supporting congresswoman. Evidently, the management couldn't face the fight. Image is all in these matters, we know, and it's decidedly not a good look for a media conglomerate to be paying out as damages $15 million to the Trump Presidential Library, of all entities. It's enough to almost get me started on the tech giants Mark Zuckerberg and Jeff Bezos, who also owns the Washington Post, of course, plus OpenAI's Sam Altman, as they have forked out millions of dollars, willing donations these, not enforced by a legal settlement, to cover the costs of some doubtless gaudy inauguration celebrations that we can expect on January 20th. I'll limit myself to holding up for inspection Altman's pusillanimous words, "President Trump will lead our country into the age of AI, and I am eager to support his efforts to ensure America stays ahead." Amid all the hullabaloo, we can't forget the overarching and serious background. Trump has, after all, repeatedly and definitively labelled journalists in general as enemies of the people, and also threatened, or sat back while followers and his incoming office holders threatened, vengeance against those who wronged him. It might be worth considering this quote from a Fox News interview he gave, which intriguingly interweaves a threat with an attempt at being reasonable. "I am not looking," he said, "for retribution, or to destroy people who treated me very unfairly, or even badly, beyond comprehension. I'm always looking to give a second chance, or even a third chance, but never willing to give a fourth chance. That is where I hold the line." When it comes to interpreting this once and future president and cutting through his often impenetrable rambling, there's a useful rule of thumb laid out by David Remnick, who edits The New Yorker magazine. He believes there's an unwise habit, a reflex among reporters, because Trump talks so much, and often it's so outlandish that it gets considered as performance art or insult comic work. "But I've always felt," says Remnick, "that in fact he means what he says in one form or another, sooner or later." It's no wonder the leaders of news organizations are worried. As well as Trump himself opportunistically initiating the case against ABC, there's been a welter of lawsuits of various kinds across many media. There are other efforts, legal and not so legal, to expose journalists' sources who need to remain anonymous. And more generally, in public and less public settings, the specter of outright physical danger for reporters has become all too real, along with direct intimidating threats. All of this conducted to the accompaniment day by day of demonizing language that's aimed at insulting and discrediting journalists. It seemed to me a naively plaintive cry that was voiced by Victoria Vilk, who's a program director for PEN America, the Writers Association. It's important, she said, that the president act with responsibility to reduce physical violence against the press rather than encourage it. I think the broad brush situation, and more importantly the media's best strategy to meet it, is best summed up by Bruce Brown, executive director of the Reporters' Committee for the Freedom of the Press, which is rather astonishingly now entering its 55th years of existence. The news media is heading into this next administration with its eyes open, says Brown. Some challenges to the free press may be overt, some may be more subtle, he went on. We'll need to be prepared for rapid response, as well as long campaigns to protect our rights, and to remember that our most important audiences are the courts and the public. I might have put those two audiences in reverse order, but I can see how down-to-earth realism about the current climate would place the courts first. The unpalatable truth for journalists is that traditional news media are entering the second Trump era seriously weakened in public esteem, as well as weakened financially, in the wake of our industry's economy being so radically altered by the digital revolution. So with our eyes open in realism, we'll need to brace ourselves for some highly likely assaults from the administration and its appointees. The Media Beat's listeners and readers will be very familiar with the declaration of war on the media that was announced very specifically by Kash Patel, Trump's choice to lead the FBI. "We're going to come after you," were his exact, rather unforgettable words. Two other appointees who've displayed similar hostility could also be in a position to directly affect the work of journalists. Brendan Carr is being promoted to chair of the Federal Communications Commission, which gives extra prominence and power to someone who helped formulate the infamous Project 2025, which outlined Trumpian policy targets for the new administration, while Trump himself unconvincingly tried to disown it. Carr also wrote a blunt letter to ABC's corporate boss Bob Iger, pegged to that regrettable court settlement and payout, saying, "Dear Mr. Iger, Americans no longer trust the national news media to report fully, accurately, and fairly." Oh, and we shouldn't forget, no matter how much we might like to, Carrie Lake. She's the Arizona local TV news host who left her position after spreading COVID-19 disinformation, then unsuccessfully ran for state governor as a Republican with Trump's endorsement, though she was previously a Democrat. When she lost, she refused to concede her defeat. Sounds like familiar behavior, doesn't it? She is now Trump's nominee for director of the Voice of America broadcasting organization. Besides the supposedly independent agencies that Lake and Carr are designated to lead, there is an actual government department to consider carefully, one that is also supposed to have its own degree of independence from the White House. That's, of course, the Justice Department, and there is a specific policy there that we need to watch closely. Irrespective of any administration's political complexion, until now at least, that policy has generally prevented prosecutors from seizing the notes and records of journalists when their stories are based on sources whose anonymity has to be protected. Under Trump, we can fully expect efforts to have that important freedom for a free working press fully reversed. The FBI, under Patel, could well be the department's best instrument to use for this going after reporters. And those of us who labor in the underfinanced fields of public broadcasting need to be especially alert to an old threat that's coming back anew. Starting at noon today, when the Senate convenes for the 119th Congress with a 3-seat Republican majority, John Kennedy of Louisiana, another one-time Democrat who's now a Trump loyalist, will be determinedly working to push through his bill aimed at ending public funds that go to public radio and television, a long-time goal of many Republicans. All in all, the prospects wholly justify the legendary editor Marty Baron, once of the Boston Globe and more recently the Washington Post, when he observes, as he has done so pithily, that in aiming at journalists, Trump, quote, will use every tool in his toolbox. And there are a lot of tools. It's not just an attack on the free press. The intent is to suppress free expression overall. As I end this broadcast, it may well seem easy for me to make the following exhortation to those in our profession who, unlike me, are in the front line of the daily battle to report on a government's deeds and misdeeds, but I'll do so all the same. Hold your nerve, I will say. That's all from the Media Beat for this first week of 2025. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.com.